Good morning. As my friend Steve Maxwell, that used to work with the Pump Church up in Portland, used to say, I believe we just got our praise on. Used to love it when he would say that. Now I know what he meant. Great Sunday to be with you this morning if you're visiting. We are glad you're here. Hope you will come back and be with us again. Hope you'll let us get a chance to get to know you a little bit as we close here today. I just realized I forgot to bring the clicker up here. Thank you, Laura. I've been a bad preacher this morning. I forgot my remote. It's either that or point at Laura every time I need one change. Thank you. All right. If you want to open your Bible up to Mark chapter 16, and we'll be there briefly, and you might also, if you've got a ribbon there in your Bible or something to mark, over in Acts chapter 17, we will end up there. Mark chapter 16 and Acts chapter 17. And I'm going to guess before we leave this morning, I will have successfully stepped on all of our toes. So if you want to buckle up and get ready, get your helmet on. And I think these are all things that God would have us to do, but probably a lot of things that we need a reminder of and maybe a little encouragement in doing. And I don't know about you, but I have several of those in my own life that I know the better thing and I know the right thing, but I don't always go that direction because I assume somebody else will handle that. Beginning in Mark chapter 16, verses 12 and 13. Afterward, and if you want to know the after what, shining in my face, driving me crazy. All right. Afterward, he has gone to the cross, he has been in the tomb, he has risen from the dead, and he begins to appear in different places. And so that is the afterward. After all these things have happened, he starts to appear. Jesus appeared in a different form to two of them while they were walking in the country. Now, different form, I don't know. We could have lots of theological debate about that, but we'll just move through it. He appeared in a different form, some they didn't recognize, to them as they were walking across the country. These returned, they reported it to the rest, but they did not believe them either. And later, in verse 14, Jesus appeared to the 11 as they were eating. He rebuked them for their lack of faith and their stubborn refusal to believe those who had seen him after he had risen. Their lack of faith and their stubborn refusal sounds nothing like anything we would ever think of nowadays, does it? We have a lack of faith from time to time. Our world around us has a lack of faith a lot of the time. And they have this stubborn refusal to acknowledge what is true and what we believe to be true. And what I want you to see in these apostles at this moment is their faith is still growing. They are not there yet. They have spent 3 years at the feet of Jesus. They have watched him heal. They have watched him raise the dead. They have watched him as Pharisees and teachers of the law tried to trap him, and he always had a way out. They watched him say what would happen to him later, not completely understanding what that was. They saw him in these mock trials where there was nothing that he had really done wrong, and yet they watched him convicted and put to death. And there was this something in the back of their minds where he used to talk about being raised from the dead, but that's not like anything we've seen before, is it? And so they didn't quite know what to make of that. Their faith is still growing. Now, we know where this is going to go in the next verse. It's the same place Matthew goes in Matthew 28, 19 and 20, 18 through 20, when he talks about going out and teaching the word and making disciples and baptizing and our responsibility to take the good news to other people. And I think one of the places we will catch ourselves here is the assumption that there is somebody else more equipped to do that than me. And in a lot of times in life, that is a true statement. There is someone else more equipped to do that than me. If we have issues with the soundboard or the video or things like that, I go to Mike. Because Mike is more equipped to do that than I am. That's his realm. That's what he does. I wouldn't even attempt to do what Trey just did. Because it would be entertaining at best, and who knows what at worst. Trey is more equipped to do that than I am. But when it comes to telling this story, we may know people that are better storytellers than others. We may know people that know the scripture better than others. But what we learn here of these apostles are they don't have it all figured out yet either, and they are still about to get this command to go. For each of us, as we sit here and we feel like someone else can tell this story better, somebody else knows the details, somebody can find these verses without first going to their concordance or to their phone to search for it, those are the people that are supposed to do this. I will bring them, I will sit them on that row right there, and Brian can teach them about this. But Jesus doesn't say any of that as he goes into the next verse. He says, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Whoever believes and is baptized will be saved. Whoever does not believe will be condemned. His command is very simple. Go. Now, the go is different for each of us. There are people who are called to foreign mission work. We had Steve Ashcraft here last year who works in Africa with churches, and he told us all about the work that goes on over there. And I have a good friend, Sai, that drills wells in Africa, and he tells about the work that they do, and when I sit and I listen to him and I see his excitement, I think it's great that he's doing that, and I can't even comprehend what it would be like to do that. I went on a mission trip in college, and I remember about 2 or 3 days in thinking to myself, I've learned lots of things on this trip, but one of the things I've learned very quickly is I'm an American. I like having a washing machine instead of a river. I like having a water heater on my home instead of a spigot that comes out of a wall with ice-cold water, even though it's 98 degrees everywhere I'm at. I like not sleeping on a piece of foam, and I'm not talking about those fancy foam things you go to mattress stores to buy, a piece of foam on a metal thing that different springs are going to pop out of each night. I like not being covered in mosquitoes all the time. I like the luxuries of life. And I realized very quickly that as I was trying to do this mission work, I couldn't stop scratching the mosquito bites. I couldn't stop thinking about how miserable I felt physically, and I realized very quickly there are people that are cut out for this kind of mission work, and then there's me. And so I don't know that that's it for me. But for each of us, once we reach that kind of point where we start to look at things that God may have us to do and places God may have us to go, we can't just knock them all out. I couldn't say foreign mission work in a country where it's 100 degrees all the time with lots of mosquitoes and cold water and all of that stuff is not for me, so therefore I'm done going. For some of us, it's to go where we are. If you look at the first chapter of Acts, you have this outline of how the gospel is going to spread. And in verse 8, he says it's going to spread to Judea and then to Samaria and then to the rest of the earth. He doesn't just send everybody to the rest of the earth first. And so I would imagine if our go is Eugene, Springfield, maybe out to Veneta or Coburg or slightly further away, if that is our go and we went and did that well, that's a pretty good go. There are a lot of people out there that need to hear this message. And so for us, there are a couple things. First of all, it's not just for those who have it all figured out, who have all the right answers to everything, who know everything, whose faith is complete all the time. It's for those who still doubt, even though Jesus stands there in front of them. For us, it's for those of us who, even though our go may not be far away, our go is closer to home, it is still a go. It's still something that we must do. To Acts chapter 17, I'm sorry, it's chapter 16. I want you to see how Paul does it. Because aside from lots of Roman columns and marble and things like that, I'm not sure Athens and Eugene are all that different. Athens was a very worldly place. And people worshipped all kinds of stuff in Athens. And I would imagine if you really start to look hard at Eugene, kind of a worldly place, people worship all kinds of stuff here in Eugene. Paul walks around. He's waiting for them in Athens. He was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. He is greatly distressed to see that the city is full of idols. So he made up a sign and began to pick it. And he went to change.org and started a petition. None of that stuff, which is the way we tend to handle these things nowadays. We want to protest it. We want to change it politically somehow. And I hate to tell you this, but a lot of the political stuff we don't like, it's not turning around. Unless you have some sort of insight that I have not figured out yet at this point, I've not seen a whole lot of indicators that say to me things are going to turn around and start going the right way. And as Paul looks around, it's not so much the idea of changing the entire culture that he sees there and going at it from a governmental kind of angle. His thought is, everything that I see around me, how can I take the message of Jesus to people who live in this every day? Which is a challenge to us, because for a lot of us, it's very unlike how we live. Now, some of us, we've taken more and more of the world into who we are, and it's the lines are getting more and more blurred, and we can't really tell as much difference as we might have at one point. But for a lot of us, the world around us is very different and hard to communicate with sometimes. And so Paul looks at this, he's greatly distressed, so he reasoned. In the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happen to be there. So notice, first of all, Paul is going. Now, I know he's going in the sense that he's in Athens. He's also going in the sense that Paul has not put up a billboard, Paul has not put up a sign that says, come see me, Paul, here, and I will tell you about this story. Paul is going to where the people are. He goes to the synagogues, he goes to the marketplace. Why? Because the people are in the synagogue, and the people are in the marketplace. Jesus did the same kind of thing. He eats with tax collectors and sinners. Why does he do that? Well, he's trying to reach the tax collectors and sinners. He's not getting them to come to where he's at. He's going to where they are. And for each of us, that presents a bit of a challenge because some of those places are not places we want to go. Some of those places are not places we feel comfortable. Some of those places are not places that we fit in. And I think we have to start thinking to ourselves, what is our marketplace? What is our synagogue? And even more than that, where do we intersect with people regularly? And I'm here to tell you, a lot more than you think. Now, some of us have tried to lessen the impact of this, and I am as guilty as any at times. Self-checkout, best thing ever. I don't have to deal with people at self-checkout. I don't have to stand in as long of a line at self-checkout. I don't have to watch someone put my 2-liter of Coke Zero next to my bread in the same bag. I can do it the right way. And at the same time, when I start self-checkout all the time, I'm cutting off another place where I intersected with people. Now, I've got a new place that replaces that because I live in Oregon. People pump my gas now. I always had to do my own before, and it was everywhere else on earth other than here in New Jersey, I think. You go and you pump your own gas, and that's part of what you do, and you don't intersect with people at all. It's pay at the pump, put your card in, do all your stuff, leave. Now, every time, it's, hey, regular fill. Regular fill, please. So that's my conversation. I see those same people every week. And I think to myself, God is placing people in front of me that I can talk to, that I can intersect with here in the course of life. For us, we have to figure out where those people are that we intersect with and how are we using that time? Are we using it in a worthwhile way or are we just doing what everybody else does, making small talk and moving on? He reasoned. Now, here is another piece of this that we're not always good at. Reasoning is not me telling you why you're wrong. That doesn't sound all that reasoned, does it? Reasoned also is not a monologue. It is not me just talking and talking and talking and talking, although it's great every Sunday for about 25 minutes. It's not me talking and you listening all the time. It's a conversation. Sometimes there might be questions that come with that. Sometimes you might fight through those questions together. He reasoned. He spoke to their intellect. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "Why is this, or what is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. They're listening to what he has to say. Now, we can say a lot about the worldliness that is around us in a place like Eugene. Something I have found, though, is people actually tend to listen. Now, they don't always agree, and they don't always think that what you're saying is correct, but most people will actually listen to you, especially if they think you're going to listen to them, too. And so a big piece of this for us is listening. And we've come about this at the wrong way. How many times have you heard someone say, "I can't go out and share this because I don't know what to say. I don't know the answers. I don't know the verses. I don't know whatever. Now, first of all, you can only say that a few times before maybe you should start studying those things and learning them because you're capable of that. If you had a car that your parents gave you at age 16 and you had the book from ODOT where you could read and take the test, how long would you just say, I don't know what's in that book, before you open it up and start to figure it out? For us, we have that same challenge today. This is not as complex as we make it sometimes. Now, there's complicated stuff in here, but the basics, not as complex as we've made it. But more than just the talking is the listening. If you don't know all the answers, if you don't know all the verses to point people to, you know how to sit down and listen to their questions, to sit down and listen to what they're concerned about in life, to sit down and listen to why church is an issue for them and they don't feel like they want to be a part of something like that. And you start to get some insight into if church were as they described it, you probably wouldn't want to be a part of it either. I mean, if we really were just a room full of 100 and whatever hypocrites and judgmental people this morning, how long would you want to come here before you were done with that? Now, do we have our moments of that? Sure. But is that who we are as a group? I don't think so. And part of this is helping people to see that. Moving on. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting at the Areopagus where they said to him, may we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting. You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean. All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. They spent their time talking and listening. And again, this is our culture today. We sit down and we talk and we listen about the news of the day, the things that are going on, and this is just another of those things that we can have conversations about. Think of the dumb conversations you have had in the last week about things that don't matter at all, things that don't affect your life in any way at all. Some of those conversations incredibly interesting at the time, some of them heated debate, and in the end, not really all that life-changing. We spend a lot of time already talking and listening. What if we just start to change gradually what we are talking and listening about? What if gradually Jesus starts to make his way into those conversations? And people start to see that this matters to you and is important to you. Then how does it begin to change? How is the word of God beginning to spread in Eugene and in Springfield and to the ends of the earth? Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. And let me tell you about how it was when I was a kid and how everything would be much better if we could just get back like that again. He doesn't go there. Now, are there times that we want to sit around and think that way? Absolutely. I honestly, other than maybe some technological advances, I kind of like the world of my childhood better than the one now. And I don't know if it's just how I idealized it or if things were really that much better. And I would imagine for a lot of us here today, you have some of those same thoughts. Whether it's how Christianity was looked at in our culture, whether it was maybe more of a freedom, more of an expectation to do the right thing, whatever it might be, it's not where we're at. And so he says, people of Athens, I see that you are very religious, for as I walked around, I looked carefully at your objects of worship. I even found an altar with this inscription to an unknown God. Now, notice as Paul walks around and looks at things, he is, first of all, not just dismissing it, which, by the way, is easy to do. I can walk around and see things of the culture of Eugene, and I can look at it and just kind of laugh and shake my head and think, those people, what is wrong with it? How do they spend money on that? They spend their time on that. What? But to each of those people, that's their life. It's what they do. And when we are dismissive of it, they don't care anything else we're going to say. Doesn't matter. And so Paul begins not by just discounting everything, but by interjecting with it. He's going to communicate with them based on what they know. And so he starts to see the things around him and make observations based on that. As I walked around, I looked carefully at your objects of worship. I even found an altar with this inscription to an unknown God. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. He started out with all of the different things about them, and then he narrowed to a point where he found common ground. And I will tell you something. When you look around at the people of Eugene, there may be a lot of things about what we're doing this morning that don't matter to them, but there are places that we have common ground. When Jesus tells us to love our neighbor as ourselves, I'm going to guess a lot of the people of Eugene like that idea. May not have any idea that that's a Bible idea even, but they like the idea of treating other people the way you want to be treated. And they, like us, probably struggle at times doing it, but it sounds like a great idea. They like the idea of justice, and we read an awful lot about God's justice all the way throughout Scripture. They like the idea of caring for those who have less. And when we look at the judgment scene in Matthew 25, that's what we find Jesus telling us to do. Care for those who have less. They like the idea of feeding the poor and helping the poor. They like the idea of caring for widows. These are all pretty good things that they like. And we start to find pretty quickly that we have some common ground that we can start with. Not you think I'm going to hell ground. Not what's with you guys on the no instruments ground. Although those are conversations that come along at some point. But that's not our beginning place. And Paul shows us that. Paul begins with this common ground that they have of seeing temples to an unknown God. And I'm going to guess no one building that thing way back when would have thought to themselves, this will be used to tell the story of Jesus somewhere down the road. And yet it was. As we close, a couple things. One, everything has been kind of individual to this point, and there's an intent to that, because if we don't individually take the go and run with it, we are never going to get anywhere. We'll have a little growth here and there, and people will move away, and we'll lose a little growth here and there. Then we'll have a little more come and a little more go, and we'll just keep marking time where we're at, because it's not all intended to happen in here. That's why the title this morning is A Church Without Walls. This is intended to be something that happens out there. But even though this is individual on us, even though there are things we're each to do, there's an element of it that's for us here too. And I read this article. It's from August of last year, I believe. And this is, if we have not stepped on your toes to this point, this is where it comes, by the way. Three things churches love that kill outreach. Three things churches love that kill outreach. We like things about church. We're comfortable with things about church. And for some of us, there is a challenge to be willing to look at things differently. First of all, too many churches love past culture more than their current context. And this is the story of Paul in Acts chapter 16. Paul could look around at the city of Athens and think, this is not what God had in mind, and he's right. But he also understands that that is the context in which he finds himself. And for us, we can spend a lot of time trying to recreate Eugene of 1925 or whatever date you want to pick. I was looking at the picture the other day that the Dixons gave me of the Eugene Church in 1916. And it's people in a park, and they're all standing, and they're all very smiley, and they've got, like, their hats on and all that stuff. And I love stuff like that. I love pictures of history. And I think to myself, we'll never recreate that exactly as it was. Now, at the same time, our life group a couple weeks ago, beautiful Sunday afternoon, we went to the park. We went to the park. We had a picnic out there. We spent time in our Bible study. We spent time flying kites and hitting volleyballs and doing all kinds of stuff. And we embrace the context of, there are tons of people in all of these parks on a Sunday afternoon because it's a pretty day. And who knows, maybe one of them will walk by, see what we're doing at some point, and want to know more. We embrace the context that we are in. We don't just shake our heads at it. We don't just frown about it. We don't desperately try to make it what it was at some point. We embrace it, and we continue on. And I will tell you, that is hard to do. It's very hard to do because a lot of us like the old one better. And a lot of us have good reason for liking the old one better. And yet here we are. So first of all, we love past culture more than our current context. And if we do, by the way, it will show. That exasperation with the people around us, it will show. And they'll know and they won't be all that interested in what we're doing in here. Secondly, too many churches love their comfort more than their mission. There are a lot of church leaders that spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to keep people happy. Now, I say that again. There are a lot of church leaders, and I'm not just talking about here. I'm talking about any church you want to walk into this morning. There are leaders most likely at that church that at least some little piece of their mind that morning has a concern about keeping other people happy. Trey started clapping a couple weeks ago, and I thought a couple things. One, I have no rhythm. Two, I hope nobody complains that Trey started clapping. That was literally the second thought after I have no rhythm that went through my mind. And I thought, I hate that that thought goes through my mind because it was a wonderful song service. Now, I'm very happy to say if anybody complained, I hadn't heard it. Now, granted, they never complained to me for some reason. Why do we have that piece of us that is so concerned about if everyone sitting in this room is happy or not? I hope you're happy. I hope you love coming here. I hope you spend an hour in class and however long we spend in here just being happy about being here. But if you are not happy and God is pleased, carry on. And I don't mean that to be mean, because I will tell you there are days I'm not happy. Just days it happens. But at some point along the way, I start to figure out, it doesn't matter. And an awful lot of the me not being happy is about me. It's not about you. It's about me getting too concerned with what I want and not as concerned with what God wants. Too concerned with what I want and not as concerned with what happens when someone comes in here who has never been here before. What do they experience while they're here? And do elements of it have to notice that? I understand that we shouldn't have to be all that shallow as a group as we continue to grow. At the same time, I look at apostles who were with him for 3 years and still don't get it. After he told them, in every way he knew how to tell them what was going to happen, they still don't get it. We're all maturing together as Christians. And there will be times where it is not done the way I want it to be done. And like it says on the bulletin board out there, it is not about my desires and preferences. It's not about whether I'm happy all the time. It's about if God is pleased and if we are able to take this relevant message to our community as a result. So secondly, we worry about our comfort more than our mission. Third, too many churches love their traditions more than their children. This week, I went to Costco, and I bought a tablet, and not a yellow one with lines on it, an electronic tablet. And the fine people that design the backgrounds that you will see up here most weeks also provide curriculum that we use in our children's Bible hour every Sunday morning. And one of the advances they have had over the last year, they've had videos and they've got color sheets and all kinds of stuff. One of the advances they've had recently is they have questions on slides that you can show on a tablet. One of our teachers realized they could do this and was doing it on their phone with this little tiny screen with all the kids. And we said, well, let's get something with a little bigger screen. Now, if you were to throw that into a 1955 Sunday school classroom, that tablet, and say, here, use this, they're not going to know what to do with that. And we could forever have that 1955 Sunday school classroom that each of us learned in, by the way. I remember sitting in elementary school Bible classes in those wooden desks like you had at school that had like the wraparound thing that bad kids had carved their names in and all of that. I remember sitting in those desks and thinking this is just kind of how things are done. And then I remember going into other Sunday school classes with happy, colorful chairs and things. And I thought, when my kids go to school, they are surrounded by technology, they're surrounded by color, they're surrounded by enthusiasm and excitement and all of those things, and we can continue to be whatever, or we can realize the context in which we live. Now, again, this brings us back to the question, well, this was good enough for me. And it was. The thing that brought me to conversion was a guy on a chalkboard, not a whiteboard, mind you, a chalkboard with squeaky chalk, drawing a picture that illustrated to me why baptism was important. And it clicked in my head that day in eighth grade, and I knew I needed to be baptized that day. It just, all of it made sense all of a sudden. Very crude stick figure drawing that he was doing up here on this board. And I could try to do that same stick figure drawing for all of you and assume that that's how it's going to work, or I can realize that things keep moving on culturally. Paul doesn't use the same example he used not in Athens when he gets to Athens, because in Athens, there is a giant temple right there that he can point at. For us in 2016 in Eugene, Oregon, there are all kinds of ways we can teach our kids. Or we can just assume it'll be this way forever. 50 years from now, they'll be driving in their hover cars and all that stuff, and we'll still be doing the same thing we're doing now. And to us, it doesn't matter because it's the Bible. To a parent walking in here with their kids for the first time, in the shiny world in which they live, with all the technology which they have, they'll walk into a class where somebody's using a tablet in children's Bible hour, and they'll think, wow, cool. And they will get the same story about Jesus that they would have gotten 100 years ago in some other way. Sometimes we can get so caught up in our traditions that we forget about our kids. And there is a flip side to this, by the way, that's not all about getting rid of things. The traditions that are worthwhile, the traditions that matter, let's teach our kids about them and why. I like a lot of our traditions. And I will talk to our kids about, this is why we do this the way we do it. This is why it's important. This is why it matters. This is who we're honoring by doing it. And could we switch it up every now? Sure, we could. But this is why we do what we do. And for each of us this morning, if it wasn't one of these three, there's something. There's something that is a challenge to us to continue bringing this into our current context. Because if we don't, then we will just continue to drift until we cease to be relevant, and then we will move on. Because if we are not going to choose to be relevant, someone around us will. And they'll be good at it. I think of the first time we put a projector up at the last church I was at. PowerPoint on the screen, all that stuff. And people weren't quite sure what to make of that. And I remember all the conversations I heard about, well, first thing, it's going to be a projector. Then it's going to be this, and then it's going to be this. And the next thing you know, we're way on down there, everybody's freaking out. If you go back to that same church today, you know what they got? Two projectors. They decided one wasn't, you know, going to put one on either side. And everything else is still similar to what it used to be. They just embrace technology as it is and realize there are things we can do here to make it better. And for each of us, there's our challenge. The world we live in continues to evolve, continues to change. It will continue to look less and less like the world you grew up in. And there will be more and more things that will confuse you. And you will start to feel older than you already feel. And then the generation beneath you will begin to experience the same thing and understand what you were talking about. And yet the church goes on. And for us this morning, the challenge is this message is too important to leave behind. Too important. This is life-changing for people, eternity-changing for people. And if there are ways that we can get this message to the community around us, then we've got to seek out whatever ways those are. Doesn't change who we are. Doesn't change what we believe. Doesn't always even mean changing our traditions. But whatever it means, we have to be willing to tell the story to those around us. This morning, if you have not been telling the story, this might not be something where you need to come up and confess anything. Think about the people you encounter this week that need to hear the story. Whether it's the person at your gas pump, whether it's the person at the store when you choose the real checkout instead of the self-checkout, the waiter or waitress at the restaurant, people you encounter in your neighborhood. There are people that you can talk to about this because if it matters to you, you want to show them how much it matters. And this morning, if you're hearing the story for the first time, we're glad you're here and glad you're able to hear it. And if you'd like to be baptized into his name, this would be a great time to do that. If there are other things you need, things we can pray about, please come when we stand and sing.